last time Kansas State won in Lincoln was 1968. 35 years ago, the Wildcats shut out the Cornhuskers behind Lynn Dickey. Today, quarterback L. Roberson and running back Darren Sproles hope to end Kansas State's losing streak. Roberson, the playmaker, is a nightmare for defenses, and Sproles is the best all-around player in the Big 12. For Nebraska, their strength is defense. The Blackshirts are relentless with linebacker Demario Williams and free safety Josh Bullocks leading the charge. The Big 12 North is up for grabs today in Lincoln.
Degrees and very little wind. A perfect day for football in Lincoln, Nebraska. Kansas State and the Cornhuskers go at it. A big game in the Big 12 North. Welcome, everybody. I'm Brent Musburger. This is the defining game of the season for both of these schools.
All right, welcome in, KSO Classic. This is our first edition, so I'm sure things will get better. It'll all improve, but hopefully this is fun for everybody. I am aware that some are going to be prepared to just lose their mind at a couple of youngsters talking about games from the past. You're like, well, you don't really understand, and that's true, and that's what I'm trying to factor in with some of the ways that we'll discuss today's game that we have on the docket. Number one is 2003 K-State Nebraska football. You just got Brent Musburger setting the scene right there from Lincoln, letting you know what the weather was like. Minimal wind, but boy, I think those guys would have liked to have maybe admitted that weather played some kind of factor in their play, because it wasn't the prettiest of games, Drew. That's you know, you look at the final score and you go 38-9, like, okay, maybe there's just some offense throughout. It was just kind of a weird game flow, the way that this game unfolded. But I will say, just off the top, like, I think these are fun games to look back on and remember from a fan perspective. Like, if you're there, is it's close for the first little bit, but then you still win comfortably. And obviously K-State did that in this game. And then on top of that, it's the fact that, as they said there, K-State won for the first time in Lincoln since 1968. And with a Mount Rushmore-level quarterback in Lynn Dickey under center, even though Drew would disagree based off of the exercise we did a while back. So we are going to talk about this 2003 game today. We have many games coming for you over the next month and a half. I guess really 2 months from when this will come out. We'll have the rest of June, all of July, and then up into that Friday before K-State and Iowa State kick off in Ireland to look back on some of the best games in K-State history. And again, they don't even necessarily have to be the most impactful or like the best visually, but they are special to K-State fans. And so all of these are ones that were suggestions tossed out over at K-State Online. So we will talk about all of that in a little bit. We'll start in just a second getting Drew's thoughts. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody that you can go to cats2ireland.com for the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic. You can get your hospitality info, game tickets, other travel packages, a lot of different things that you can get over there to make your trip an experience to the Emerald Isle for the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic that much easier. So go to cats2ireland.com for that experience for the game that kicks off August 23rd, 2025. 5 o'clock start time over there. It will be a 11 o'clock kickoff here in the States. First game of the college football season in week zero. So that is what we got going for you there. And let's get into talking about K-State Nebraska in 2003, Drew. Just any initial thoughts from watching this game, experiencing it, and seeing kind of how it unfolded, but also just like things to me. There was no first and 10 line in this. So this was before ESPN had like debuted that on Monday Night Football. And that's kind of strange to see. There are some other things that I'll point out throughout this that signal the era that it was in, or spots where college football has gotten better or worse since this moment. But just kind of some initial thoughts from you.
Yeah, so my first initial thoughts, number one, you led into this thing that there were going to be a lot of Easter eggs. I've already picked up on a couple of those as we've gone along, and we were only 5 minutes in, so I can't wait to see what else you got up your sleeve. But I was 4 years old when this game took place, so I had obviously never really seen this game. I'd heard about this game for almost like the amount of time that I've been alive for post this game, and had never actually seen it. So I was excited to really like go through and like really see it. But as we'll talk, like I think that both of our game scores really get impacted by us not being that old at the time of the game, and really going in and watching this as an adult now, and not really have like the nostalgia of like being there or watching it on TV. More thoughts that I have just in general about this game. I'm glad that I was young, because I think I'd be punching air that K-State wasn't ranked at 8-3 and Nebraska was number 17 at 8-2. Like the resumes weren't that like dissimilar between the two, outside of obviously K-State losing to Marshall, but L. Roberson was hurt. So like that's like just a wash for me. But it was fun to really go through and like really watch it for the first time. I had no idea that this was a Brent Musburger, Gary Danielson game. Also, we have a whole category about like stuff that like you could tell that this is like the era that we were in. It was so fun to me that they still had the game breaks on the YouTube video that we had, and like that this was the 2:30 regional ABC game, because there wasn't enough time slots for everybody. So this was the regional ABC game of the week.
So I made some notes about that, and the first part of that being, yeah, like regional TV and regional games, like, you know, that was still, they still kind of did that going back like 15-ish years ago, but it was more so they would shuffle them around. Like the ABC, if you were in Wichita, you would get a different game than if you were watching ABC in, you know, like Phoenix or something. But you would still be able to see that game on like ESPN, I think. Like they did something where you could still see it a little bit easier. Here, this was, if you didn't have that, the ESPN game plan, the pay-per-view, you had to be local to see this game. And then at the end, they cut away from this game for the local viewer. So we watched, this was uploaded by a Nebraska fan. So shout out to them for just...
Very sicko of a Nebraska fan to upload.
You find a game, you're like, I'm going to put it up there. Good for you for doing that. So it was recorded out of Lincoln, I believe, and they cut away from the game. And like, that's something that you don't see. But so that was something with the broadcast. It was like a signifier of the era that it was in. And you look at it and you go, man, that's kind of wild. But there were some other things too that I made note of with those game breaks. Number one, like John Saunders was phenomenal at that. And for some reason, yeah. I don't know what it is, but like anytime you get an ABC in-game update, it feels different. It feels bigger. It feels better than when it's on ESPN. And that, you know, that's shifted even to now where it's not John Saunders there anymore, RIP, actually dead. But like Kevin Negandhi's doing it, and I think Kevin Negandhi's really good. There's just something different about that. So that has translated over, which has gone very well. But also in that update, how about that Florida State quarterback throwing the ultimate Brock Purdy / Max Duggan interception that a defensive lineman took for a touchdown for NC State? That was the thing. I made an instant note of that. I was like, oh, we got a Duggan Purdy throw from the Florida State quarterback.
Oh, I'm glad that you took note of that, because behind the scenes here, going into a lot of these shows, it is usually ball up top for me. Like, I'm just ready to roll, and you have to hear me kind of go on a little bit of a tangent because I don't always have notes. I have so many notes from this game, and I'm glad that you made note of that Florida State pick, because I actually, that was one of the first things that I noticed too during a game break. I was like, huh, we got a big man pick. And it was just an awful throw by the Florida State quarterback.
Which, the other thing,
Then the other thing that I made note of on that same game break was Philip Rivers was the NC State quarterback. Oh.
I didn't even pick up on that. It's funny you mention the all that and thinking of how that kind of breaks down. I watching that going, man, the quarterback play in that ABC window, whatever game you got was terrible that day, because L. Roberson and Jamal Lord combined for 5 interceptions. And then I don't care what happened in the rest of that game. That one pick from the Florida State quarterback is as bad as it gets. Do we have any idea who that Florida State quarterback was?
I can't remember who they said that it was, but all I saw was P. Rivers. And I was like, holy cow.
I felt like I didn't register. Like, I didn't hear.
No, but
the name of the guy, or
it didn't register with me, but also like
Chris Ricks.
That's rough. But I had no idea who Jamal Lord was until yesterday. So. Man,
hey, Philip Rivers balled out in this game. He threw 4 touchdowns, 422 yards, only 10 incompletions on 38 attempts. But it would appear that his team fumbled the ball a number of times because NC State had 3 turnovers and Philip Rivers didn't throw an interception. So, and they lost 50-44. Ooh. So heartbreaker in Tallahassee for the Wolfpack. All right. Let's get in a little bit deeper to this. Everybody kind of saw in the intro that the Big 12 North standings were there. It was consequential. Once again, we have a game where K-State goes to Lincoln and the Big 12 North basically hinges on that game. You know, 6 years later, Bill Snyder would return in another game that would have those stakes attached to it. A little less of a talented team that he had there in 2009. But it really set up well for K-State there because you beat Nebraska, then you got Missouri the next week, and we know that Bill Snyder went on that stretch where he just owned Gary Pinkel, and Missouri for that matter. So we have that to go off of. That was where things stood. K-State needed to win the next 2. It got him into the Big 12 championship game against #1 Oklahoma, which was alluded to a couple of times during the broadcast. And at one point, Gary Danielson said, before this game was even really put out of reach, that he thought K-State had the best chance of matching up with Oklahoma than Nebraska and Missouri, who were also in there. He really stopped mentioning Missouri, and Brent Musburger kept like, well, and Missouri could still be there. And you could tell Gary was like, yeah, Missouri's not freaking going to be there, Brent. So that's what's going on there. Here are the Big 12 scores from the day that you could see on the broadcast. Tech and Texas hadn't kicked off yet that night. Missouri took down Texas A&M 45-22. Colorado beats Iowa State 44-10. Oklahoma State beats KU 44-21. And Oklahoma beat Baylor 41-3. They were making jokes about that OU-Baylor game being 24-3 before halftime. And like, oh, Baylor's still keeping it close. That's #1 highlights how bad Baylor was then. And also just how great people thought that Oklahoma team was. And they were a couple of weeks away from finding out how maybe overrated that Oklahoma team was. So that's what's on the docket there for the Big 12. Drew, just tuck away this scoreboard for a second. It is going to be important later on in the show, but we'll get into that at a later point. Time to start talking a little bit more about this game. But before we talk about any of the action on the field, I need you to give me a rating for the uniform matchup in this game, because we're going to do this in all of these. And it's going back and looking at older games. We know that the era of jerseys is different. Some teams have changed a lot of the way that they look. These are 2 teams that have not changed a lot of the way that they look on the field. Give me your uniform matchup grade and why you went that way.
Are we going at a 10 on this?
Yeah, scale of 0 to 10.
I'd probably give it an 8. It's a very classic uniform matchup. If you really dive in, like, there is just like slight changes to both teams. But I have never been a white top silver pants.
Okay.
Fan.
Well, you suck.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's the best look K-State has.
It's not, but I've never been a white top silver pants, person. But that's just kind of it is what it is, but it's 2 iconic uniforms. Like, you can tell from the jump who the two teams are that are playing. So that makes it like about an 8 for me.
Okay. Well, I gave it a 10, and I was going to try and be, you know, like, oh, well, I'll do some decimals in there. I'll try and keep. No, this is a 10. I think this is the best uniform matchup in Big 8, Big 12 history. Because, like I said, I think that the silver, white, silver is K-State's best look. That's why, you know, when they wore that in the Big 12 championship against TCU, they also wore that in the Big 12 championship against Oklahoma. So anytime they won a Big 12 title in a game, it's been because of that. And then also, I think that you – and by the way, K-State chose to wear the silver, white, silver in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama a couple years ago. So the team knew that was their best look. But anyways, then Nebraska, like, I think for most people they would say those are probably pretty recognizable, iconic, some would say. I wouldn't go that far. But I just think it's obviously a very big contrast of colors where you've got purple and white and then red and white on the field against each other. But I just think when you look, like, those are two classic uniforms. They're totally different from each other in terms of the way that they look color-wise. And so it pops a little bit better. Whereas, like, some would maybe say, you know, like Oklahoma and Nebraska from that era. But both of those teams are wearing shades of red. So, like, I don't think that's actually all that appealing to see. I think this is the best that the Big 12 has ever had to offer in terms of the uniform department. So that's what we got going there. I'm sorry. I'm glad that you at least went to an 8, even though you hate the iconic cat uniform. But
I think the K-State's best look is actually the home uniform. Watch next week. KU and K-State could be a sneaky high ranking.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was a good era of KU uniforms.
Yeah, it's not the era that they're currently in. That's for sure.
No, they've been in a bad era for a long time. So yeah, that's for next week. All right, let's move on now. Start talking about things that actually happened in the game. In the first quarter, not a lot happening. We learned pretty quickly in this game, as you know, first time full game watchers. This was definitely 2003 when they were playing football. It was just fling that sucker down there and see what happens. And L. Roberson was obliging to that game plan. He was throwing the ball all over the place and everything that kind of went along with it. He eventually did kind of settle down, and he threw 3 interceptions in the game. And I thought, well, how is that going to look as the full game plays out? None of them were great in terms of like how they worked out, but they weren't as horrible as I thought they might be. And clearly they didn't impact K-State in this game. But, you know, if L just doesn't give the ball to the other team a couple times, because he really did kind of hand it to him, K-State maybe has an even easier game on their hands.
Yeah, I think that if you really look at L's career and L's trajectory, at least from like my perspective of not really honing in and really watching every single game and really knowing what was going on at that point in time, this kind of feels like the peak L. Roberson game. Like, you get the high yardage, but you get the low completion percentage, and then you also get 90 rushing yards and a touchdown. Like, that was kind of like peak L, and also peak this era, because it really seemed like K-State was run, throw it deep and see what happens. Run, throw it deep again and see what happens. But I think some of that is because, and I really got reminded of this when I went and watched this, L didn't exactly have a lot of touch on his passes. It was bomb that's coming in at 100 miles an hour or nothing. So because of that, I think that they kind of did what they had to do. And really looking at L's career stats, even like this is about like the peak L. Roberson game, because he ended up throwing for a bunch of yards at K-State. He had like 5,000 in his career, threw for a lot of touchdowns, but also threw a lot of interceptions, and also had a bunch of rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. So like this was like L's career in one game, I think.
Yeah, it's It was interesting to see how it unfolded. And I look, there's a lot more L. Roberson games that are out there, but like you kind of set the stage for what it is. And it made me think, like, where is he? Like the way he played in this game, and this is him as his senior year. Like, where are some like equivalencies to the way that Avery Johnson played last year? Where like clearly both need to dial it in and learn some touch on their passes. I think Avery has more deep ball touch. I don't think he can throw it as hard and like. If but you're talking offered, like, give me your best piss missile, I think that L's got Avery beat on that. But
he
also think
shouldn't throw as hard as L did.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think there are times where it's just like, eh. And maybe that got him into trouble too, because it definitely appeared that he is a guy that realized I can throw the ball really well. I can fit it into that window. I can get it. Like some of those, you just go, what are we thinking here? I don't know that we need that shot on second and four or whatever it ends up being. So it just made me think, like, where are some things there? Because, I mean, if you put sophomore Avery Johnson on this team, are you getting the same results? Because I think both, again, it's one game that I saw from L. Roberson here, and I know how great he was in others. But he also had, you know, Darren Sproles at running back, best running back in school history as his running back, so that kind of helps. We saw how great James Terry was in this game and really this entire season. Like there's just a lot of, and you know, the offensive line was phenomenal here. Like
I know that it's different eras, which was tough, but I think that you get probably a pretty similar result, just probably less interceptions. Cause from what we saw last year, Avery doesn't put the ball in harm's way as much as the few games that I've seen from the 02 and 03 season. L loved putting the ball in harm's way. I mean, he threw three picks in this game and should have had four. Like, if it wasn't for a Nebraska guy knocking the ball away from his teammate, he would have thrown four.
A lot of drops in this game. A lot of drops in this game from receivers and DBs. I will, like, here's what I will say, though, is because I think people are probably going to go, well, you're just, you know, recency bias, young guys. Here's what Avery Johnson does need to learn, in my opinion, from L. Roberson, is you see in this game, it, amongst all the failed, like, under center quarterback runs, which is just, like, another thing from this era that you go, oh, my gosh, they're going to try this again, is when you have the running ability and athleticism of a player like L. Roberson or Avery Johnson, if you are decisive and just say, all right, it's time to go and take off, it can be pretty deadly. And L had that down where like he was not processing. Do I throw? Okay. Now I need to maybe run, but I don't know. Like it was okay. Not there. Boom. Let's go. I think you need a little bit more of that killer instinct with running the ball from Avery Johnson. Like I don't subscribe to all of, you know, to a lot of the people that were, you know, saying he was soft and all this other stuff last year. I don't think it had much to do with that. I just think there was some conflictions inside of his head on, well, I need to throw the ball and like people think that I'm a runner. Like I need to be a quarterback. Your talents dictate the kind of player that you are and that you need to be. And like being a great running quarterback is a huge asset in college football. So I think what you would want to see that L. Roberson had in 2003 for Avery Johnson in 2025 is having just more of that. All right, let's go. Time to run. And if that happens, I think it makes the K-State offense better this year.
No, I think that you hit it on the head. I think that the one thing that L did very, very well in this game and throughout his career was if it wasn't there right away, he would just run. And he was just faster than everybody else and was also just extremely tough to bring down. I mean, there were a couple times that I saw during this game, I was like, how did he get through all of that?
Yeah. All right, let's keep rolling on talking more so about the game here. We talk L. Roberson. We'll mention Darren Sproles in a little bit. James Terry was phenomenal in this game where, yeah, he had six catches for 175 yards and two of the touchdowns, but also one of his first big catches in the game, it was kind of this weird, like, deflected or bobbled ball that he was able to haul in. And he just, I mean, six grabs, but they were all pretty impactful over the course of this game. And, you know, you look around and it ends up the way this flowed. K-State scores in the first quarter. They're up 7-0, and then Nebraska adds one halfway through the second. And so you thought maybe at some point, like, the footing would be found. It really wasn't in the first half. Both teams just kind of went back and forth with, I don't know, playing soft or whatever it may be, or making mistakes. But there are two things that I wanted to point out about Frank Solich in this game. First, it's just coaches never stop doing this. They're either, when things start to get a little uncomfortable, there's got to be a change in who's calling the plays. Either they take over play calling duties or they give it up. And we learned early in this broadcast that Frank Solich had given up play calling duties to some guy named Barney Cotton, I think, or Darnell. Yeah. Cotton. I don't remember what the so that's just impeccable timing by Frank Solich to do that. It may have just been the fact that his quarterback wasn't very good. And then if we keep talking about, oh, Frank Solich, what are you doing here? And this one game made me realize why maybe Nebraska wanted to fire the guy. In the first quarter, he punted from the K-State 38. Like, I don't think in any scenario teams are punting from their opponent's 38 in college football today. And even back then, I mean, Bill was aggressive at times in this game. Like, no, the 38-yard line, you're getting nothing from getting a punt off from there.
I'm glad that you made note of that, because in our Sign of the Times category, I wrote that down, and then I wrote down K-State punting on a fourth and half a foot from their own 46 on the first drive of the third quarter.
Chris Kleiman would never.
Of, like, things that, like, oh, that was just that era of college football, that there wasn't a lot of analytics being used or aggression on fourth down.
But you want to talk analytics, the final score of this game was 38-9. How about Bill just telling the punter, hey, run around in the back of the end zone for a little bit and take that safety. And then even funnier is that K-State had just quit at that point, and they got another touchdown in the game from that stage. That's one that, you know, that's a little new era thinking there.
That was, and, like, going back and thinking again, because I just don't know a whole lot about this game and didn't know a whole lot about this game before we really watched it. The whole time I'm thinking 38-9 is an odd score. And, like, walking, like, going through the first quarter, like, halfway through the first quarter, I'm thinking to myself, is this a 3 field goal Nebraska game, or is this a touchdown and a safety? And then it's 31-7. And I'm like, how in the world does this K-State safety just happen? And then to see that it was just the punter just running around in the back of the end zone was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I was excited to see how the safety happened in this game. All right, we'll get into more of the game recap stuff. I think flow-wise it might be better, because we're just going to cross over into our categories. We'll rip through all those, and then we'll empty the notebook at the end of it if we still have things that we need to get off our chest. I think it'll be out there, though. Best play. Let's talk about that here, Drew. What is your best play from this game?
Well, there's a clear and obvious best play. It's the most iconic play from the game, but we're showmen. So we I can't have the same thing written down as you, which was why I wrote down two options for my best play. So I have Brian Hickman hitting Jamal Lord, leading to an Andrew Scholl interception.
All right, here it is. This is Brent Musburger and Gary Danielson reacting to Jamal Lord's first pick of the game.
There's more pattern. They're very well coordinated.
Need to reach the 34 for a first down. There's a blitz coming. Lord is hit. Ball's picked off by K-State. They've got it inside the 25-yard line. It was Andrew Scholl, the big defensive end. He had a jump ball situation.
Yeah, Brian Hickman, I think the linebacker, got him from behind on that play. Three-step drop. You must throw the ball. There's Brian Hickman. Watch him come around the back of this play. Three-step drop. Throw the ball. Throw the ball. You're not protected. Lack of experience at quarterback, and that's the big turnover that Kansas State needed, their first of the game.
They rocked it, and Buell was in on that hit, too.
So, great play there. That's one of those, like, college football-type hits that people love to see. Just crunching the quarterback, meeting right there, and then it leads to a pick.
And a great play by a defensive end to actually catch the ball, because I don't think that would have been a fumble. It's like that, that's a great play to actually catch the ball too.
Yeah, and look, instant replay was not a thing yet, as we found multiple times in this game, because I made note that the only Nebraska touchdown of the game came on a phenomenal play by Jamal Lord to get that ball off, but he was technically down, and that obviously wouldn't have counted back then. It did in this era. So like you're saying there, like if the ball is not caught by Andrew Scholl, it's just an incomplete pass. So K-State wins out there and how it worked. And yeah, that was a great play. My best play. Yeah, this is the one that I think most people would point to. It is iconic, not just for what Darren Sproles did, but I think it's Wyatt Thompson's best call all time at K-State, considering just the mechanics of play-by-play. And so here is the Wyatt and Stan version of Darren Sproles' touchdown at Nebraska in 2003.
Second and 10 from the 22. Roberson option, short side right. Good pitch to Darren. Sproles at the 20. He's at the 15, 10, 5, chugging. Touchdown, Darren Sproles! That is amazing! 22 yards for Darren Sproles, his 13th rushing touchdown of the year. How about that play for the Wildcats?
Yeah, there's energy there. You can feel the moment, and the chugging part of the call, I think is great, just from a in the flow of the moment type deal. And that's exactly what happened on that play. He was chugging with the defender that he was dragging. And I think I went and looked, I think that defender was listed at 6'2", 225 that he was pulling into the end zone with him. So that's significant. We also got a story in here about how the nickname for Darren Sproles came about, and that before he was Little Tank, he was just Tank, because did you pick up on this, Drew? He was born at 10 pounds.
Yeah. And then I also heard that Brent and Gary Danielson both kind of went after Darren a little bit, saying that they think he got smaller as he got older.
Yeah. Well, look, Brent and Gary were not afraid to dive into some things. So yeah, that's we'll get into that in a little bit, because I've got some other things in these categories that will pop up. I even have some video that we'll discuss. So we'll get into that in just a moment. What was the worst play of the game? Because for me, I think you can have your pick of any of the L. Roberson interceptions, because they were not great. And there were a few that I was like, I'll give you half credit for. They're maybe not as bad, but you did not like me trying to sugarcoat the picks. You were like, they were all terrible.
No, all of the picks were bad. But I think that the worst, because this was, you know, you made kind of like the Avery Johnson comp to L, and just talking about like the similarities between the two. This play reminded me of something that Avery did last year, and it was not either A, spiking the ball, or B, calling a timeout. Mm. And instead, everybody was just kind of in a hurry and didn't really know what was going on before the end of the half. And then L throws it. He couldn't have thrown it more to the Nebraska guy to end the half. Like, it doesn't matter, because it would have probably been a long field goal anyway. And you'd already missed one field goal going into that. But the fact that, you know, a K-State coaches kind of just let this happen without calling a timeout was bizarre to me. And B, the fact that L had played like portions of four seasons to that point and didn't elect to, again, either A, call timeout, or B, spike the ball, and instead just threw it right to the Nebraska defender for a pick.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, for, you know, Avery, when he did it against Arizona last year, it's like, okay, this is only his fourth start ever. You're like, L had been the quarterback for a long time, or had a lot of experience at that point. I would say another candidate for worst play in this game, it would actually be a string of two of them. But Nebraska going down the field, some of their last gasps, and they throw that ball to the end zone, and it gets broken up. So they go and they do that, and that's fine, whatever. But it gets broken up. And then the very next play, they try the exact same thing, and it gets picked off at that point. That would be in there where, you know, L's interceptions were bad just solely because of him as an individual. That was like the Nebraska pick that sealed the game. That was bad from the coaching. That was bad from Jamal Lord. It was bad from everybody involved.
Can't blame Frank Solich. She wasn't calling the plays.
That's true. And that's maybe why he did it. That was a heady play by Frank.
I forgot to mention this in the L not spiking or calling timeout thing that was just hilarious to me. Was Gary Danielson like losing his mind, telling L to like get ready, get everybody ready and just spike it. Yeah. And L just doesn't and throws a pick. And to hear Gary losing his mind after the pick was also pretty hilarious.
Yeah, say what you will about Gary Danielson. He does get pretty expressive at times, and that is very entertaining to hear. And we'll talk a little bit more about Brent and Gary here in a little bit. What aged well from either this game, this era, this broadcast, in your opinion? Because I have a handful of things, and I would say a lot of information that this broadcast gave you. So there were times where it would flash up on the screen, here's how many DBs are on the field. And, you know, in this era, it may not be as important because teams have kind of just, it's a little bit more standard, I guess. A lot of information, like personnel wise, you're getting constantly fed different things throughout the game on both teams. And also just like, you know, they'd had a part where they highlighted like, hey, we're in Lincoln. Here's what Nebraska, the school, is like. We had a moment where we got to meet Bill Snyder, where he revealed that his favorite team is the Boston Celtics and his favorite movie is Pinocchio, which were fascinating revelations to find in the game, like stuff like that. And then I appreciated what they were trying to kind of do, but they did like the Monday night, Sunday night football intros for the quarterbacks, where they would like, you know, and you can't say the school because you're at it right now, so they would say where they're from. But it was like really awkward because, you know, L. Roberson would be there. He's like, I'm L. Roberson. I'm from Texas. Like that kind of thing. But I appreciate what they tried doing. The other thing, though, the hang time graphic. Why did hang time go away? You know, that used to be something we saw in every football broadcast, and now we don't get it anymore. It's probably ultimately meaningless, especially in like the rugby punt era. But I want it. I like the hang time graphic. It's kind of fun to just see how long that ball is in the air. Bring the hang time graphic back. The coaching, I would say the coaching apparel in this game, like
that aged well.
Turning into like the golden era of coaching apparel, where like the modern era, you can see kind of how we got to where we were. But really, the other thing, Cincinnati and TCU are highlighted in this during a game break as conference opponents. So that aged well, obviously. The two biggest things, though, Drew, Pacific Life game summary and the Aflac trivia question, standing the test of time and still being around, phenomenal. That is, because those two things are iconic. I will forever be talking about the Pacific Life game summary and the Aflac trivia question in these important ESPN-produced games.
This Aflac trivia question, though, was lame.
I had that written down. Here is the lame Aflac trivia question. Josh and Daniel Bullock's starting safeties for Nebraska are twin brothers. Which one is older? Yeah, I normally love the Aflac trivia question, so as a concept, I do like it. This one flat sucked. This was
They had no actual ideas for this game.
And that's so also like... asking which twin is older, that doesn't actually matter. I don't know. Twins out there, tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that actually matters. Nobody cares. You know, I never just go, off the top of my head, I have one friend that is a twin. He's got a twin sister. I cannot tell you who came out first. Now, if you'd say that the first one to come out is the smarter or the sager one, he would probably be okay with me saying that I think that his sister is smarter than he is. So maybe she came out first. I have no idea, but I really don't care. So
they had no ideas and saw that there were twins that played for Nebraska and were like, oh, this would be a fun question. And then having the other one say that the other one was older was so dumb.
You got to have the older one there. So Drew, in that spirit, this is going to be a common theme during KSO Classic. We have the Aer Lingus trivia question for you to make up for how bad the Aflac trivia question was in this game. And you remember, I told you, remember these scores from earlier in the show. Think back to those because they're going to play a factor later. So, Drew, today's Aer Lingus trivia question for the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland. Go to cats2ireland.com right now to get your travel, hospitality, and game tickets. This is your question. Who was Colorado's starting quarterback in their win on this day over Iowa State? He was 21 of 27, 288 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. Colorado's starting quarterback.
I feel like there's one answer, and this is why you have made this question. Was Joel Klatt the quarterback at Colorado at this point?
The correct answer is Joel Klatt. There you have it.
One for one. That stopped the count.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I was looking. The second I got to think, I was like, that's such a bad question that they asked. I want to do something like that. And so I was like, well, I'll go and like, you know, kind of pick around and see if I can find anything from that day. There really weren't many, like, you know, Jason White obviously was playing, but that would have been pretty easy to guess. And not who cares. So this was, you know, that was a little fun nugget. Popped in. I was like, oh, because all the others, I was like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know who. Oh, Joel Klatt. There you go. So there is your Aer Lingus trivia question of the day. So, all right. What did you have that aged well from this game?
Things that I had that aged well, I actually had the quarterbacks introducing themselves as something that aged well. Like, I want to see that more. And I think that if you get even further into what ABC did later on in the season, because I've watched the 03 Big 12 championship game a few times, the quarterbacks introduced an entire team in the Big 12 championship. So that's really cool. The ABC jacket, the Jack of Root wore, phenomenal. Like, that was like peak television for me. And then I also had written down, I also have this kind of in like the sign of the times I will get into later. But I did like all the information on the broadcast, like the five DBs on the field at once. But also, like, I'll get into why that's like a sign of the times too, because there were some things like schematically that were just blowing my mind during that entire game.
All right. So here are some, and I'm with you on the, so the quarterback like introducing thing, they expanded on that like a few years later than where it was, they did like a mashed up version where they would have a player or like a celebrity of some kind do it for the team. And they would highlight from each kind of like group a player. So it'd be like, you know, here's quarterback, but then this is a running back or receiver or tight end. This is the offensive line. Like, they did a better job of that. And that was really popular in that era too, because I don't know if you remember, but Fox used to do that for their Saturday baseball games where they would have a player read the starting lineup for his team or like a celebrity do it.
Bring it back.
It's cheesy. It's weird. I like it though. So there you have it. Things that aged poorly from this game. This was a part of the in-game update, but we got some action from the World Golf Championships World Cup, which is no longer in existence. It was a two-man event, and it took each country had a team involved. So we had Trevor Immelman and Rory Sabatini together. Trevor Immelman, major champion. Jim Furyk and Justin Leonard, major champions. Then two French dudes I'd never heard of, a couple of random Swedes and Germans. Paul Casey and Justin Rose in 2003. Those guys are both still trying to play professional golf. Justin Rose is actually doing it fairly well. So I don't know. That actually aged well from inside and aged poorly, which is this event. And then Angel Cabrera, the delinquent himself, was on that leaderboard. So
I knew that you would have the golf thing written down.
Yeah. I just, and ABC doing golf, fascinating. And then the AI graphics, I think this is one that you had.
Yeah.
They were ahead of their time because we've seen how popular they are now. Everybody thinks they have to have these weird, stupid graphics. Like Sunday Night Football gets cooked for them a lot that they throw out there. ESPN will try it. Fox will do it with some weird stuff. You immediately were like, oh, that L. Roberson graphic, what were they doing there? I said, don't worry. I've got the video, and here it is.
Williams makes the stop.
He really is. And the reason is he's
a quarterback who's an athlete, and he throws on the run both to the right and the left. So shifty, hard to get a good shot on this guy, even if you want to put him out. And as I mentioned, the only Bill Snyder quarterback ever to start twice here in Lincoln.
I mean, just, I appreciate what they were trying to do, but somebody, that technology was not ready for that at this point in time.
The shifty portion, when I watched this, I was by myself when I watched, but my mouth like just hit the floor when I saw the shifty portion.
Yeah, that was great. And then a couple of other things for me, refs wearing white pants. Anytime I see a game from, you know, I don't even remember when the shift happened, but it was sometime within like the last 10 to 15 years. It is incredible how much better black pants look on refs than the white pants. The white pants just make it look so old and ugly. So the white pants, get them out of here.
This is so like funny because it's something that like you would definitely notice. That never once crossed my mind that the refs were wearing white pants.
Any game I watch and I go, oh my gosh, the white pants stretch was bad. Regional coverage on ABC, we already talked about that, where Brent Musburger and Gary Danielson, that's your number two team if you're ABC ESPN, because we know Keith Jackson would have been doing the best game of that week. But your number two team is doing regional coverage. Like, that's just it's an insane thing to think about now, how that works out. And then you will like this one. You may have picked up on this. Willie is wearing the wrong jersey. He's wearing the purple jersey on the road.
I 100% noticed that and wrote it down.
We talk about this at every basketball game because Willie is never in the right jersey at basketball. He has to change or just look like a goon. He's wearing the wrong jersey on the road. It's not hard. Willie, you knew you were going on the road. You're wearing white. Come on.
I have a few other things written down that you didn't have. I actually had Mike Tirico on ABC as something that didn't age well because, you know, he left. I also had the regional coverage as something. And then as something else that didn't age well, and we alluded to it earlier, but something that didn't age well from this broadcast was cutting away from the game at the end. Like, that never happens anymore. And it was just bizarre that that we got to really see it. And then another one that I also kind of have like in the sign of the times, we've talked about it already, was not having the first down line on the screen. Really messed with me more than I would care to admit.
Yeah, it's just it's weird. It feels like downs are a concept. They don't matter when there's no first down line. You're like, well, I don't know. I think they're just trying to get it in the end zone from 70 yards out. I don't think they're trying to get 10 yards and keep the drive alive. It's score or die, basically, here. Yeah.
And then the last thing that I have is the no reviews. Because number one, you said that Jamal Lord was technically down. He couldn't have been more down if he tried.
Well, I'm saying, but like, he was not ruled down, so technically he was. It would not have counted in today's rules or in the rules back then. They didn't rule it that way.
And then I talked about the one of the things that like was mind blowing for just that era of football was not going for it on fourth down from the K-State's own 46 on like fourth and half a foot. Antoine Polite also got that first down.
Yeah,
but there was no replay. So the no reviews did not age well either.
Yeah, not great there. There's another thing that I'll probably bring up from the broadcast that we've got some more things to talk about when we come to that end of things. But real quick, who was your MVP of this game? Because I think it's actually kind of tough to choose one given the way that L performed. Or like, Sproles having 140 yards, it did not feel like that watching this game. I was stunned to see the final tally.
Which is why I don't think that the MVP is relatively close. I think it was James Terry. Like every catch that he made was a huge catch that got big yards, got a huge first down, or scored. Like, he was the best player on the field. Really, Sproles had 140 yards, and I think that like 30 of it were on that touchdown run. So he really didn't do a whole lot other than that. And then you can't give it to L when he just kept giving the ball to the other team. So that makes it tough for me. I had a couple other things written down for MVP as I stall for time a little bit here. The other thing that I had written down, and this is where I told you that I had one player and then just one just overarching like blanket thing written down for MVP. I had K-State's offensive line written down.
Yeah.
L didn't really get hit a ton, and they still ran for a bunch of yards and was kind of the reason that K-State went on to cruise in this game. And then the other thing that I had written down that was just like an overarching thing was just Bill Snyder, because he kind of put Frank Solich in a locker in this entire game. Well,
yeah,
actually, he didn't have Frank Solich in a locker because he didn't call plays.
True. He had his offensive coordinator in a blender. We kind of forgot, we alluded to it and mentioned it. The things that kind of like sign of the era age poorly from this too would be just some of the concepts with how you set up formationally and like the plays that you would call out of those formations.
Every time that I saw L. Roberson on the shotgun with a fullback next to him, I wanted to die a little bit. Like, can you not have, you have Darren Sproles at running back. Can you not just have him run a route instead of having a fullback just be a pass protector, or having the tight end stand up and shotgun was like a jump scare to see that still happened. And then I told you while I was watching the game that I think that I saw more I formation in that first quarter than I think I have in the last maybe 7 years of watching college football.
Yeah, it's it was fascinating to see. Underrated player. Who's the underrated player from this game? I think we both probably have the same one. And I thought maybe you're going to go with this guy as your MVP of the game, but who do you got?
There's two guys that I have written down. So I'm going to take the first one. You can take the one that we think that we both have written down. My first one's actually Brian Casey. He had a couple big catches during the game because Nebraska was so set on K-State running the ball. And Casey was a good enough athlete that he essentially kind of did what, again, if you're comparing like eras, he did what Ben Sinnott did to Oklahoma.
Yep.
By just running up the seam and making big catches. Also makes this list because we showed the play earlier where Sproles had that big run. That was sprung by a Brian Casey block that got pointed out multiple times by Gary Danielson, of course.
Yeah, Gary's on top of it.
But that's why I'd go Brian Casey.
Well, you bring up Gary. Let's talk about the broadcasters one final time. Well, we're gonna do it first by taking a look at just.
Are you not going?
I got to throw mine out there. Thomas Houchin is the one that we both had that we had discussed.
Yeah,
that he was a phenomenal game. So, and it really you watch this game and you think about. You know, we just did the Mount Rushmore of defensive ends at K-State. And you think of from that stretch of like basically from the second K-State started making bowl games under Bill Snyder to, you know, it hasn't really slowed down, but the amount of just great defensive ends and linebackers that they've had has been pretty, pretty good. And then on top of that, like, I mean, this stretch of like this era that they're in 03 and before that, like you had two great defensive ends on teams and you had, you know, two or three great linebackers. Like it just, you see why this defense was as good as it was. There was one of the guys that we were reading up on in the Mount Rushmore that like all five of the seasons he was on the K-State roster, the K-State's defense never ranked outside of like the top 10 in the 90s. Like they're just, so good.
He had a great aesthetic. A lot of players in this era had a great aesthetic, and including my random player of like I kind of forgot about him. But kind of talking about the broadcast as a whole, it was fun to hear Brett Musburger on the call, and even like as somebody that doesn't necessarily like love Gary Danielson, like it was fun to hear both of those two call a K-State game again, because just that era. Like, we associate Gary Danielson a lot more with CBS, with how old that we are. Was not the greatest day for either of those two.
They struggled a little. I was disappointed.
This was not their best. They are a lot better in this season and in the Big 12 championship game than they are in this game, but they were still solid. No, it was fun to listen to them call a K-State game.
You know that, like, they, Gary Danielson kept talking about how great of a game L. Roberson was playing. I was like, I don't know if that's just like the bar was so low for quarterbacks in 2003 with completions and like turnovers, which it kind of was, but I was just like, we think he's playing a great game right now. Gary Danielson at one point said in the first half, he thought this was the best game he'd seen L. Roberson play. Now, maybe he was talking in person and they had seen injured L coming off of, you know, being hurt and missing time earlier in the year at Texas. And so they were clearly like, well, he looks like a totally different dude now because he was more healthy. Although I think it was clear in this game that he still wasn't at 100%. I mean, he kind of got banged up some more. But I was like, what are we talking about there? A couple of other things from the broadcast, though. They highlighted towards the latter part of the week, they had something called their Mad Play of the Week, which it stood for Musburger, Arut, and Danielson. And they did it like it was a comic book superhero movie. And they focused on L. Roberson and Jamal Lord. There was beef in the week leading up to it. These guys kind of had traded some barbs, which was great for this game. And then Jamal Lord kind of walked it back, which, in hindsight, great move on his part because he must have been aware that he was about to get his ass kicked. But here is the Mad Play of the Week where they focus on L. Roberson winning the beef with Jamal Lord.
Into the opening coin toss, and L. Roberson went to the center of the field and said, all right, black shirts, let's bring it on. You've been yapping here for a year now. How are you going to get even in Lincoln? Well, I'm coming to your house, and I'm taking away a W back to Manhattan. There ain't nothing madder than coming to Lincoln and saying that, folks. That's your Mad Move of this week.
Absolutely. Didn't back up one step, did he?
So there you go. That was the Mad Move of the week. And then you could throw this in as like some foreshadowing, or maybe it aged well or aged poorly. But we all remember Brent Musburger being kind of how some old guys get when they get to a certain age and they just say whatever they want about young people, specifically young women. We remember when he did that with AJ McCarron's girlfriend during the national championship. Brent and Gary, they had an ad read that was set up perfectly, almost like the producers knew what they were doing in this game. It's definitely a sign of the times, and it definitely showcases the mind of Brent Musburger.
Well, here's something for you, Gary. Spend the night with Britney Spears and go places the camera shouldn't. Who writes this copy? Britney Spears in the zone Monday night at 8, 7 Central, and after football on the West Coast. Go places the camera shouldn't. That's shameful. Third down. Lord, going deep and out of bounds.
I've seen the pictures of Brittany. Where else is there to go?
Ah, the line of the day. All right.
I mean, so on brand for Brent Musburger, and a lot to take in there from their Britney Spears special ad read for ABC.
Yeah, that was a rough moment for both of those two. Also,
two Disney employees.
Also, like, sign of the times that, like, Britney Spears would have a special, like, a couple days after this game.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's it's just so, and I don't know, that whole thing. I just saw it instantly. I was like, what? This is so on brand, and it makes sense now. And that's just one random game we saw. Like, how many other Brent Musburger games could we look at and find some that you just go, oh, they really towed the line here. A couple of other things from the broadcast that I want to point out. We got a shot of Brett Bielema, young, thin Brett Bielema, the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach. Yeah. He looks good.
He, that, like, I talk and made like jokes about like having jump scares at different parts of this game. Brett Bielema was another one of those that I was like, oh, okay.
And you know what's crazy is like he is not deviated from what his style is with the pullover. I thought maybe that was something that he had done once he gained a lot of weight, that he was just like, I'm going to wear the trash bag pullover to, you know, just it's the most comfortable, whatever. Not going to get bad angles, too bad of angles for me. But no, it's just that's been the style. He's just probably sized up a little bit. What I would love to know where some of the coaching apparel from this game is. Like, do you think Brett Bielema still has that somewhere, or did it end up at a Goodwill? Because I've shared the story about I have a Dana Demel pullover from when he left for the UTEP head coaching job that he had dumped at Goodwill. So I've
the
got
the coaching gear in this game was pretty elite.
It was great. And then a couple of other things that stood out to me as notable from the broadcast. We got on a sideline shot. You could see the backs of some players' jerseys. There was Chris Bogus in there, who shout out to Balls from Bogus or Balls by Bogus on the board. Very funny username over on KSO, but that just stood out to me. I was like, well, I only know about that guy for one reason, and it was, you know, for the mishandling of his coach's balls. And that I think that's all I got from the notable moments from the broadcast. Was there anything else that you saw that stood out? There were some crowd shots at times where the glasses that like the guys were wearing, I think, strictly stayed in that 2003 time frame.
No, I think that you got about everything that I had. Like the thing that I think that was just the most notable that we haven't talked about yet was just the score bug was phenomenal in this era, like that, and to see that you kind of took a little bit of the homage to the score bug for what we're doing today, just great work by you.
Well, you know, I wanted to throw that out there. How would you grade the broadcasters here? You know, just regular school grade, A, B, C, D, F. How would you do it? Because I was so excited when I was like, Brent and Gary, like, this is going to be great. And there was a lot of production value in this game, but they did not have their best stuff today.
No, this was probably like their B-minus game. Like, Gary and Brent were not great. The production was great, but they struggled.
I went C+. Went C+.
Well, yeah. you were a little bit. I'm grading on a curve a little bit.
I knew they had better. You know, it's just going to be a little harder on them.
Production made it stay in that B range for me.
Was there a random player that popped up over the course of this game that you go, oh, that guy is here, or I forgot about him. I didn't realize he played there. Like, was there?
We talked about this a little bit before, and some of this is just like being spoiled because the 03 team is like such an iconic team for K-State that like you don't really get like a total random player for K-State in this game. But the one that I have written down was actually one of the guys I had on my best play because I just really wanted to talk about his aesthetic more. Brian Hickman and Josh Wool's aesthetic was like freaking insane for that era. Like,
also
the huge floor pads and wearing number 18 as a linebacker for Hickman was great.
Also, nobody threw up the lynch mob sign more than Josh Boole. Like,
he did love throwing up the sign.
He might be the most iconic one to do it, and you can find like tons of pictures of him where he's doing it and everything too. He's phenomenal, and just I think you talk about aesthetic, like I think that's one of the best combinations of talent and just look on the field from a linebacker, really any player in State history. My random player is just how strongly the focus was on Richie Incognito in this game for Nebraska. He popped up, he was hurt, kind of going in and out and everything, and then we know, you know, some just random offensive lineman from Nebraska that was obviously talented, was going to have a decent NFL career. And then people really only knew who he was because of some bullying scandal that I still don't know. Like, I think the more I've read on it, the more it seems like he wasn't as in the wrong as people thought. But just who knows what went on there. And then a couple of years ago, I guess this would have been a year or two, My brother was down in Arizona with my dad, and my brother was thinking about taking a job down there. And the guy that was trying to get him to go work for him, it was in golf and all this other stuff. And so he was like, well, you know, come out, play with me at this course or whatever. Show up. They've got a fourth with them. And he's like, yeah, it's Richie. And they pull up, and it's this massive dude. And it's Richie Incognito that my dad and brother are playing golf with. And that's my dad crazy. Said that, like, partway through the round, he says to him, I got to ask you a question. And Incognito kind of like responds like he knows what's coming. Like he thinks my dad's about to ask about the bullying thing. Was the guy's name Thomas Martin?
I think that you're right.
Or maybe, no, Jonathan Martin. Jonathan Martin was the guy. And my dad, and he kind of gets, and my dad's like, oh, no, not that. He's like, I went to K-State. I was at the 2003 Nebraska, and asked him something about this game because I think it's my dad's favorite game that he's been to this point in time, which leads me into this, Drew. We're going to rate all of these games on that same scale, 0 to 10. I had a tough time grading this one because of the way that it played out, the way that it looked. It really wasn't that great of a game. It wasn't like the most entertaining, but what I had to do is, we know that the stakes that were involved in it, it was going to put K-State on the track to be in the Big 12 title game as long as they took care of business with Missouri the next week. It certainly led to them winning a Big 12 title. And on top of that, like, first win in Lincoln since 1968. You also, looking at it, like, getting to, you know, K-State had beaten Nebraska at that point a couple of times in Manhattan. So you felt like, okay, this is starting to become a back and forth type of thing. But you had that last hump to get over to kind of slay the demon, which was winning in Lincoln and getting that experience. And it wasn't just the fact that K-State went in there and won. It was the fact that those fans that walked out of that building that day. So, like, my dad talks about it all the time, riding back to where their car was, because he went with a Nebraska friend, riding back to where their car was on, like, the public transportation and being in that bus or whatever it was, and just him in purple surrounded by a bunch of people in red that were sad and pissed off. And he gets to experience that, you know, being just this smug guy at that point in time because of what just took place. Like, I don't want to undervalue what that was. So I gave this game a grade of 7.4. And a lot of the heavy lifting is done from the stakes that were attached to this game and just the meaning and the feeling that I know a lot of K-State fans who were there that day have associated with this game. Because aside from that, it wasn't close and it wasn't really all that appealing. It was some ugly football at times. It was really anchored by those big plays that James Terry had where, you know, it didn't feel like you were building. You had a couple big plays every drive. It was crap, 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 boom, big play, touchdown, crap, crap, big play, touchdown. Like, I do like games, though, where you're there and it's a battle early, but then it's still a comfortable win. Like, think of, you know, like KU gave some good resistance in 2022. Like, that's a fun game to look back on. 23 and 24, those sucked the entire game to sit there and experience. Like, that's not fun. 22 is like K-State was always ahead. It was at arm's length, but KU kind of tried. They were a little frisky. So, like, I like those games where you pull away, but it wasn't enough in this game that was appealing. So I let a lot of the heavy lifting be done from the experience of fans that were at this game, the emotional attachment, and what it ultimately led to, which was Bill Snyder's first Big 12 title. So I give it a 7.4.
This is where you can tell that we have hung out a lot and are in, like, that same age range, because I gave this game a 7.2. and for a lot of the same reasons. Like, the actual game, I don't think, was, like, fantastic. And what actually brings this down a little bit for me was just the quarterback play was not very good for K-State. Like, it was fine, but the game grade would have been a lot better for me if you take away the 3 L. Roberson interceptions, because I think that K-State wins this game by closer to 40 points than 30. Yeah. So because of that, like, it just dips a little bit, because you had 2 interceptions in Nebraska territory that came at really bad times. And, like, there is like, you can still have like a really good game and have like a blowout. But for this to be a blowout and also kind of like a gross game a little bit, made it like a 7.2 for me.
Yeah. My final thing for you, I got a question. What would Darren Sproles' yard per carry average have been if L didn't throw so many bailout pitches to him? Like, you could make the argument maybe it evened out a little bit, and then he probably broke some for like 50 yards in his career. And I get like that's kind of the point of that style of option that they would run at times. But there was a lot of times in this game where L was holding the ball and holding the ball, and then Darren Sproles caught the ball at like the hash mark near the out of bounds line, and I was like, oh, he's getting a 2 yard loss right there.
No, that is a great point. And then just the amount of option that I saw in that game was pretty insane for two teams that aren't like triple option offenses now in college football. But like you saw K-State run an option where they ran it like with a receiver. You saw obviously with Sproles. You saw kind of like more of like a triple option play where they ended up handing it off to the fullback. A lot of fullback in this game and in this era, which was fun to see, because like I, and obviously you, like we like seeing teams spread it out and really throw the ball all around the yard, and it's fun. But it was fun to like go back and really like watch what football used to be like, where you just really had an athlete at quarterback and you had a really fast running back and said, all right, here's our two best. Let's try and stop it.
Yeah. A couple other things that I'll just empty the notebook here. I thought that one of the things underrated here, I stand on this for a long time. Cheerleaders in long sleeves, that's an elite classic look from a cheer perspective. Also, losing the regionality in college football, the K-State band was at this game. And so, like I would imagine in this era, you had at least three games that the band would go to, where if they played in Lincoln, Lawrence, or Columbia, the band was probably there. I don't know, maybe even when they ended up in like Norman or Stillwater, maybe that was a more common thing back then. That's obviously something that's lost now. The band only goes to the game in Lawrence when it's a road game. So like that's something that I thought like great from this era that adds to the experience of college football. And I look, people are probably stunned to hear me say that as a known band hater.
No, I had that written down too as something that I wanted to talk about. Like that was so fun hearing the band at a road game.
I respect what the band does for college football. I just don't need you going past what I need you for at a college football game. Again, just funny to me, Gary Danielson kept talking about how great of a game L was playing, and that was right before he threw another interception. And I'm just like, this, he's not playing a good game. So just some of that stuff. I thought the moment to put us in the shoes of fans, I think the moment that would have been like, holy cow, this thing is actually happening, would have been the James McGill pick in the fourth quarter. You would have, at that point in time, thought to yourself, okay, I think we're actually going to win this thing, because they had just scored a touchdown to go up 17. They come out, McGill gets the pick, and then they immediately score another James Terry touchdown on a dart by L. Roberson. I think that would have been the moment where, even though it seemed like, you know, how's K-State going to blow this lead? You still would have had a little bit of that disbelief where you're like, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think this can happen. And then you go, holy crap, we're going to do it. And that had to be probably one of the best feeling moments from that game. You know, we talk about how great the Sproles run was, or like the 63-yard touchdown for James Terry was awesome. That would be the moment where if you were sitting in Memorial Stadium in Lincoln that day wearing purple, that would have probably been the best feeling that you had all day.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The last thing that I have, and then we can really wrap this up, was that I made note of was that K-State ran a 4-3 almost the entire game. Like, I can't remember the last time that I saw K-State really run a 4-3, and it's more of just, again, just what this era was. And they knew that the best way to stop most teams, but especially Nebraska in this era, was to stop the run. And having more linebackers on the field and having more defensive ends and defensive tackles, like it, That's why, like, to me, it was just crazy that you kept seeing, like, oh, Nebraska has five defensive backs on the field, and they would always, like, make note of that. Where, like, now, most teams, their base defense, they have five DBs on the field.
Yeah. All right, that will do it for us. I'm Mason Voth. That's Drew Galloway. Thanks for joining us for the first edition of the KSO Classic. We did 2003 K-State Nebraska today. 2009 K-State KU football is up next week. So we have that to look forward to. And then that next one will be 4th of July. So think of fireworks and what game we might choose to do for that one that was requested by the people. And if you want to get a request in, you can still go throw it into the threads over at KSO or leave it in the comments here. I will take your request more seriously if you're subscribed to this page. I don't normally beg for subscribers, but I will threaten you to subscribe. So there you go. If you're watching this and you're not subscribed, do it, and then I'll take your request more seriously. But that will do it for us today. And also wanted to remind people that you can go and check out cats2ireland.com for the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Get your travel, hospitality, and game ticket packages right now. You're running out of time. You still have it, but get on it pretty quick. I also just wanted another excuse to throw up another one of the graphics I made for this era. Did you like that I added the WW dot to it on the graphic, Drew? I figured it was appropriate.
The two things that I loved with this graphic are the WWW dot and then the old Iowa State logo.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to be era accurate with my logos, just like our boy Joel Klatt there next to the mustard yellow CU instead of the old gold. So there you have it. That will do it for us today. Cats win 38-9 over Nebraska. We'll see what they do against Missouri. Down the road, maybe this team could win a Big 12 title. I don't know. We'll figure it out soon enough. But that'll do it for us.
Pretty good though.
Yeah. Best team ever. We'll see. We'll be back next week with another one of these, and we'll be back later throughout the week with recruiting updates and everything else that you know we bring you at KSO. And we're always on at On3 and KStateOnline.com, where you can get your first week for just $1 right now. And I'll say we'll have a recruiting, like, some breakdowns tomorrow on Friday, because we've done this and I think people are excited enough for it. We're just going to drop this on Thursday. I thought we were going to do it on Friday. We're going to do it on Thursday, and we'll just have a regular day tomorrow. How about that? So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. We will see you next time on the KSO Show.